Chapter 12.
Planet Hoth. 11 days before Plan K10.
Nymir hadn't dressed for the cold, and he regretted his choice of apparel the moment the ramp dropped down and a frigid tide surged into the shuttle. Specks of frost danced around the ramp's far end, melting slowly upon contact with the metal, and snow, true white snow, the kind Nymir had only seen twice in his life, paved the runway into the hangar.
"I take back my defection.
Darth Vader can have me," Chalas murmured. Nymir cast a glance at her, saw her dark hair dappled with pale flakes. Her hands were behind her back, where Nymir had bound them in stun cuffs, a condition of Alliance High Command. Together with the captain, Roja, and Beak, they descended the ramp into Echo Base. The journey had been painfully long but uneventful. Howell himself hadn't known the Rebel base's secret location. Instead, he'd programmed the shuttle to follow routes provided, one after the next, via coded messages from the Alliance. Those routes had taken the shuttle far into the wastes of the Outer Rim and spiraling into the Anoat sector. When Howell had plotted a course to the Hoth system, the travelers hadn't known whether they'd find their goal or just another message there. Chalas had passed the time reading classical fiction from Howell's data library or further refining her holographic schematic. Howell had found a hollow chess partner in Beak, and Nymir had, by the second day, demanded they mute their battling game pieces. Roja had been the eager conversationalist of the group, ready to share anecdotes from his time as a dock worker with the unwary. Nymir had tried to occupy himself by turning the engineering pit into an exercise room and working himself into exhaustion. By the end, he'd been more than ready to leave the shuttle. He hadn't expected the vessel to be more comfortable than the Rebellion's hidden base, but now he was beginning to wonder. Beyond the ramp, half a dozen meters down the hangar runway, a small group of rebels stood awaiting the shuttle passengers. They were all dressed for the weather, their matching jackets hooded and heavily padded. Three of them carried blaster rifles at the ready. Good, Nymir thought. At least they're not complacent. One of the group stepped forward, a pale man with a thick mustache and graying hair, who wore the insignia of a rebel general. Proper insignia, like snow, were something Nymir had rarely seen before. The man introduced himself as Philap Bygar and shook the hand of each of the Twilight emissaries as Howell introduced them by name and position. When Chalas, shivering in the chill, stepped up, Howell smiled tightly.
"Governor Ivari Chalas," he said, "an extraordinary artist and gracious guest of the 61st Mobile Infantry, former emissary to the Imperial Ruling Council."
"I'd shake your hand," Chalas said, "but I wouldn't want to make things awkward."
She shrugged, lifting her cuffed wrists behind her back. General Bygar nodded slowly and raised his hand in a salute.
"The Rebel Alliance believes in redemption, Governor," he said. "Don't let our caution convince you otherwise."
"There's no shame in being wary," Chalas said.
Bygar stepped back and looked over the group. Nymir felt his fingers numbing as the man spoke.
"If I could thank everyone from the 61st, I would," Bygar said. "You've had some hellish assignments these past few years, and you've survived things few other companies could. That's a reputation to be proud of, but not a pleasant one to earn, particularly when the reward is even worse assignments down the line. You're not wrong to think High Command sees what you've been through and sends you back for more. No one deserved to be sent to Prakten or Black Tar Sist."
Bygar's praise surprised Nymir. Under the circumstances, it was hardly necessary. The general didn't need to win over Howell, so Nymir was forced to conclude that it was, in part, sincere. He felt a discomforting mix of appreciation and resentment churn in his stomach. The general continued,
What I can tell you is that we know what we're asking of you and the price you pay every day. I know it, and I'm grateful you're out there fighting for our cause.
Roja and Beak stood with their arms pressed to their sides, holding in their body heat. But their chins were up, their eyes focused on the general. Howe's expression was somber, and he nodded stiffly as Bygar concluded his speech. Chalas caught Namir's glance as he surveyed his colleagues and smirked. It might as well have been a wink.
"Now, let's get you warmer and then to work," the general said, and the formality dropped from his tone. "It never gets comfortable here, and you don't quite get used to it. But there are ways to make it livable."
That, Namir thought, was the most he could hope for, along with as short a stay as possible. He already missed the shuttle, but he ached for the Thunderstrike. Not comfortable but livable was a phrase that stayed with Namir over the following days. Howl and Chalas were whisked away almost immediately to a grand strategy conference with Alliance High Command. Namir saw them in passing in the base's corridors, and otherwise not at all. Roja and Beak were, with Namir's approval, split and assigned to teams appropriate to their skills under Echo Base commanders. Namir, too, accepted reassignment to keep himself busy. The base was hewn out of the ice of a massive glacier, with natural caverns augmented by structural supports and linked by artificial corridors. Power cables and lighting rigs were strewn haphazardly about, and Namir was assured by a maintenance droid that one faulty element could deny heat to half the base. In its construction, then, Echo Base was almost comfortingly ramshackle. It reflected the abilities of the rebellion that Namir knew. The men and women posted at the base were less familiar. Their clothes and combat gear were a grade above anything Twilight had ever possessed, both in quality and uniformity. When the quartermaster handed Namir an A280 combat rifle before patrol, Namir stroked the heavy barrel with something close to awe. Bundled in a thermal protective jacket and polarized goggles, Namir was nearly as faceless and unrecognizable as a stormtrooper. With that uniformity and orderliness came an emphasis on the importance of rank and hierarchy. It reminded him of stories Charmer had told about the Imperial Academy. And on his second day, he learned why. Probably a third of the personnel here were Imperial cadets before defecting. A young man, Namir thought he'd introduced himself as Krindle, though he hadn't been paying close attention, explained. They sat together in the tool shed, warming power converters with welding torches. The converters had already failed due to internal icing, but if they could be revived, they'd be returned to service in the base. It was grunt work, more suited to a droid than a human, but the job needed to be done. And Namir lacked the technical specializations Roja and Beak had. Krindle kept talking. "Maybe another third of us, some of the cadets too, went through Alliance Special Forces training. 4 months of misery, but they were the most important ones of my life. You want to learn how to use an antique slug thrower, disarm a proximity mine, or rappel off a ray shield? I recommend it." Namir flipped a switch on his converter. No lights, no sound. Back to heating. "I've used a slug thrower. Other two never came up." Krindle shrugged. "Something to think about. High bar to qualify, but I'm guessing you wouldn't be here if your captain not looking to retrain," Namir said, and Krindle let the subject drop. Two ships arrived at Echo Base on Namir's third day. The passengers' identities were classified. Rumors among the rank and file claimed a highly placed Bothan spy was involved, but no one doubted the visitors were coming for the strategy conference. That conference was, day by day, becoming the dominant topic throughout the base. When Namir hiked to the perimeter outposts, through windstorms that tossed ice shards like shrapnel, he heard the calm chatter of sentries discussing attendees. General Riken, Commander Chifonich, Princess Leia Organa. When Namir was in the mess, pilots asked him what he knew about Governor Chalice, told stories about her mentor, Count Vidian. Roja, who'd bonded with the Echo snowspeeder technicians with shocking speed, came to Namir more than once to pass along the latest wild speculation. Chalice was the last piece of a puzzle the Alliance had been working on for months, and now there was a 5-year strategy, or a 4-year strategy, or a 1-year strategy that would win the war at last. It was wishful thinking. Even the troops speculating knew as much. But they hoped there was truth buried in the dream. Namir understood. He'd thought similar things once, in other wars. He didn't have the patience for dreams anymore. He didn't speak to Chalice again until the end of their first week on Hoth. He was leaving the command center after delivering a tactical assessment of Outpost Delta. Busy work, perhaps, but he'd been told fresh eyes would be valuable, and spotted her in the frozen corridor. Their direction and pace matched. Chalice was unescorted and uncuffed. Namir gestured at her wrists. Winning new friends? It took a day or two, she replied without turning to look at Namir. But we all came to an understanding. I receive a pardon from the Alliance for past deeds, and in return, I agree not to seek official power in any post-war government. They don't want you around either, he said. You sound as surprised as I was. Namir barked a laugh. They reached an intersection in the tunnels, and they both hesitated for a fraction of a second as they turned in separate directions. If it keeps you out of twilight, Namir said, you've got my full support. Thank you, Sergeant. Chalice was walking away before she finished the words. On the Thunderstrike, the mess served mainly storage-friendly staples in semi-edible combinations, broken up with occasional fresh vegetables, fruit, or meat procured during a raid. Ration packs were stockpiled for activity planetside. Their utility made them, militarily speaking, a luxury, and Twilight Company had no reliable means of acquiring more. But nothing worth farming grew on Hoth's frozen and meteorite-cratered surface, and the Alliance's domesticated tauntauns, horned, stinking, ill-tempered snow lizards, were more valuable as mounts than as meat. That left military rations, delivered in massive crates and procured by means Namir couldn't guess, as the mainstay of every meal. At a table with Krindle and a handful of other Echo personnel, Namir enjoyed the dubious pleasures of an envelope of protein cubes suspended in thick orange goo. Bland enough to be inoffensive, gelatinous enough to linger on the palate. He preferred to eat alone or with Roja and Beak, despite their tiring praise of the base's virtues. Roja's bond with the technicians had grown almost familial, while Beak had declared his intention to join the Alliance Special Forces. But Namir's colleagues were nowhere to be found. There had been no empty tables. Krindle was tracing rings on the tabletop, naming planets and concocting a scenario in which, one by one, the core worlds miraculously began falling to the rebellion. A blonde woman and a snout-nosed alien were enthusiastically debating him, offering alternative plans. The assassination of the Emperor, or the liberation of slave worlds to bolster rebel troop numbers. Maybe I'm crazy, Krindle was saying, but it feels we're on the verge of something real. We can make it to Coruscant. The Empire wouldn't be fighting so hard if it weren't afraid. Namir knew he'd be wise to stay out of the conversation, but it was the end of a long, tedious day of walking trenches and shutting out conversations too similar to the one he was hearing now. And Krindle was just so smug. What happens at Coruscant? Namir asked. What do you mean? Krindle responded. The others turned to Namir as well, waiting. For starters, Namir said, you've got a capital planet full of what? 10 billion people? More? The woman smiled, amused but not mocking. Considerably more. Fine. Out of that considerably more, how many do you think want the empire overthrown? Krindle's tone was steady but insistent. You don't live on Coruscant long without realizing... Namir interrupted. I'm not finished. My guess is it's not as many as you think. In fact, I know it can't be that many, because if it were, you'd have a civil war on Coruscant right now, instead of a bunch of rebel cells in hiding. It's not that simple, the woman said. Namir was talking over her. But suppose most of the population doesn't feel strongly enough to resist either way. They're not up for a fight. Fine. You've still got a hardcore element that's going to turn against the rebellion the second you start bombing. 1% of Coruscant's population is an awful lot of people, and I guarantee we're talking about more than that. Imperial loyalists, sure, but also anyone who doesn't trust the Alliance to run the place. You're going to send fire teams into the streets to deal with them? Start cutting down civilians? One way or another, it's going to get bloody. And it's not going to stop for a very long time. Krindle's voice was still even, but his face was locked in a grimace. The Alliance has a transition plan. Democratic elections aren't going to convince anyone, Namir snapped. And this is all your best case scenario. Maybe the Alliance decides not to invade Coruscant at all. Too much trouble. It's way easier to contain the Empire's strongholds than to achieve total victory. But you know what I really think is going to happen? The alien said something, tugged at Krindle's arm. Namir couldn't make out the exact words through the creature's accent, but the meaning was clear. Krindle wasn't moving, however, and Namir rose out of his seat, leaning across the table to stare down at the man. I think, Namir said, that as soon as any real victory is in sight, the Alliance will fall apart. You think there's anyone in that strategy conference who's not looking to come out on top? You think the instant their common enemy is weakened, you won't see half a dozen different rebel factions turn on one another? How do you think you ended up in this mess in the first place? After you won the Clone Wars, the Emperor snatched up power. Other leaders missed their chance and started a rebellion. Victory always brings infighting. That's not how it happened. The woman was speaking again. You've never met the princess or worked with General Ryken. They're not just looking to seize power. Krindle was scowling in silence. Namir watched him, saw his hands flex against the tabletop. It wouldn't take much more. Namir knew he could still walk away, but he needed this. If you really think those people are heroes, Namir was answering the woman, but his eyes were on Krindle. You're deluding yourself. Darth Vader's own stormtroopers are praising him the same way. Krindle threw the first punch. It wasn't meant to be a debilitating blow. Namir was exposed, and Krindle could easily have aimed for his eyes or the point of his jaw. Instead, Krindle struck Namir hard in the chest, shoving him backward and forcing the air from Namir's lungs. Namir grasped Krindle's hand before the man could pull away. He didn't bother to catch himself as he stumbled, instead dragging Krindle forward onto the table and using him as a counterweight to stay upright. Krindle sprawled for only a moment before getting his legs back under him and leaping at Namir. As he grappled with Krindle, Namir felt someone approach behind him. He threw back an elbow, felt it sink into the layers of a thermal jacket. He drove a knee forward into Krindle's stomach, saw the world go dark for an instant when a gloved hand struck his face. Voices were shouting. More bodies in jackets and goggles joined the fray. As he fought, knowing he had no chance of victory, Namir laughed. The worst of the damage was a broken nose. Now donning the rebel's polarized goggles left Namir nauseated from the pressure on his nasal bridge. His right hip had turned deep purple overnight after being slammed hard against one of the mess hall benches. The knuckles of his left hand ached too, though that at least was a mark of pride. He didn't remember the details of the fight, aside from how it had begun. It hadn't lasted more than a minute or two, just long enough for someone to separate him from the other combatants and drag him to the medical center under guard. He'd spent the night there and been greeted in the morning by General Bygar, who'd used the word disappointing more than once. Howl, Bygar had explained, was needed at the strategy conference, and so hadn't yet been informed of Namir's behavior. Namir was grateful for that much. So, with the approval of the medical staff, Namir had been given the most demeaning assignment Bygar could find as punishment. He'd spent the morning lugging shipping crates, sometimes with the assistance of a grav loader, often not, from the hangar bays to the Echo Base interior, taking tiny, childlike steps all the way to avoid slipping on patches of ice. The droids in the hangar directed him where he needed to go, and he rarely had to speak to another living being. It didn't bother Namir. He'd done far worse jobs. One of the rebel ship captains eyed Namir as he hefted a canister of Bacta over his shoulder and marched beneath the undercarriage of a light freighter. It was a territorial look, the suspicion of a man unhappy admitting a stranger into his domain.
"What happened to you?"
the man asked as he tugged burnt and melted wiring free from one of the freighter's ramp conduits. There was no concern in his tone. The bridge of Namir's nose seemed to throb, as if a glance were enough to irritate it. Namir looked at him. Brown hair, light skin, perhaps a decade older than Namir. He wore no rank insignia, but that was more common among the ship crews than the permanent base personnel. "You know those special forces goons?" Namir asked deadpan. "Turns out they take this rebellion seriously." The captain cracked a smile, shook his head, and went back to his repairs. By late afternoon, Namir had taken to swearing at the droids in response to their every demand. The droids complained, but had no recourse but to absorb the verbal assaults. Namir found the experience oddly satisfying. By evening, after he'd managed to unload most of the day's cargo, the droids began sending Namir back inside the base to tote ship-bound supplies and maintenance equipment out to the hangar. He wasn't sure if it was an act of revenge or part of the general's intended punishment. The additional work didn't bother him. He didn't have anywhere better to be, and he wasn't looking forward to returning to the mess or sleeping among the base personnel in the barracks. He considered bunking in Twilight Shuttle, but that seemed cowardly, the action of someone ashamed of his deeds. Namir encountered the freighter captain a second time while carrying a bin of mechanical parts earmarked for the freighter. He couldn't guess at the component's function, but when he boarded the ship, the captain, who was busy dismantling a ceiling panel, grunted and gestured at the floor. Namir set the bin down. The captain crouched, sorted through the assortment of wires and rods and cylinders, and pulled out a small golden disc.
"Hold this, will you?" he said,
and pointed Namir to a secondary panel within the ceiling compartment. Namir had to stand on his toes to do so. The captain began screwing the disc into a socket, ignoring the sizzling sound from the panel. The heat felt good on Namir's frost-numbed hands.
"Who'd you get into it with?"
the man asked, without looking away from his work. "Krindle," Namir said. Didn't catch his last name. Or maybe his first.
"You deserve it?"
Namir shrugged in return. "I like to think we both did." Namir didn't question the rebel captain when the repair job stretched out to 10, 20, 30 minutes. When Namir asked about his crew, the man only shook his head.
"They're out on other business," he said. "Don't ask."
When the task was finally done, or maybe when the captain had given up, the man produced a bottle of Corellian whiskey and dropped himself on the boarding ramp. Namir took that as a tacit invitation, And from there, their conversation followed a meandering path lubricated by drink. The captain grumbled about his ship and told an unlikely, obscenity-laden story about how it had been damaged. Namir detailed exactly how he'd ended up on cargo duty for the day. When Namir finished describing his encounter in the mess hall, the captain shook his head and offered a relaxed, mocking rebuke.
You can't just tell these people they're doomed. They ever wise up, I'm out of a job.
You a mercenary? Namir asked.
Something like that.
You must have wanted to take a swing at these guys once or twice. The captain laughed.
I don't bite the hand that feeds me. I don't need to start a fight I can't win either.
I could have won, Namir said.
Then you sure didn't try too hard.
The captain grinned and took another swig of the whiskey before passing the bottle. It wasn't particularly good. Both men had agreed on that after the first sip, but it was potent and, Namir suspected, the only drink of its kind on Hoth.
Anyway, you're too young to be this cynical, the captain said. How'd you even join up with that attitude?
Long story, Namir said. Kind of an accident. It wasn't for the cause, at any rate.
I hear you, the man said.
They drank in silence a while, and it was the captain who spoke next. His voice was quieter, his speech a touch slurred. The lights of the hangar had dimmed with nightfall, and even with the bay doors closed, the cold was creeping inside.
You remember when that battle station blew up?
Before my time, Namir said, but I heard about it. The captain nodded.
After that, I didn't notice at first, but for a while it felt like we could really end this war. You looked at those kids who shot down death. It didn't make any sense if you thought about it, but it felt like we were going somewhere.
They all look like that, Namir said. Fresh recruits.
Not just fresh recruits, the man said. Not all of them.
Again, there was silence. A red and white astromech droid rolled across the hangar floor, squawking at something unseen.
Keep us busy, though,
the man said. Bad wars are good business.
To hell with that. Even I'm not that cynical.
The man shook his head vigorously.
But if it did end, you know the way we put up with them now? Even when they're downright insufferable? How long you think they'd put up with us after?
Namir nodded very slowly. Not so long, he said. The captain didn't answer. Namir held up the whiskey bottle, watched the amber fluid slosh against the glass. He laughed softly before speaking again. I'll say it if you won't. The war is damn well better for me. The minute we win, I've got nothing. So the idea that it'll keep going on forever, that feels right. It does feel right, he thought to himself. He felt warm as the notion of the ongoing war, never won and never lost, soaked into his bones, steady and comfortable. Even the fantasy, the briefest notion of a rebel victory, made him queasy. It had been that way for years, though he'd never said it aloud before. Never thought about it so consciously. The captain looked troubled, however, as he wrested the bottle from Namir and drank with a grimace.
If they knew you thought that, the captain said and trailed off.
Namir shrugged. They don't.
And that doesn't bother you?
I'm here to protect them. Doesn't matter what they believe. The captain lifted the bottle to his lips again. This time, he didn't drink. Instead, he breathed in the whiskey's aroma, lowered the bottle, and pressed it decisively into Namir's hands, without turning his head.
If it's a job, then it doesn't matter, and neither do they. You do what's right for you, you tell them what they want to hear, and you move on when the job's done. Otherwise...
He seemed to wrestle with the words as if fishing them out of the depths of his cloudy mind.
Otherwise, if it's more than a job, they deserve better. If you can't get behind what they believe in, maybe it's time to walk away.
Namir held the whiskey bottle close to his chest and felt its rim rub against his chin. Something in the back of his brain warned him that the wetness it left might crystallize in the cold. "I'm not a rebel," he said. The captain said something as he stood and walked slowly, swaying up the boarding ramp, but Namir didn't hear what. Namir grasped the bottle in one hand as he descended to the hangar, angling toward the exit into Echo Base proper. He thought about Brand and Charmer and Gadrin and Roach, and Ajax and Fectrin and the Comtech who died in Asirphus, the woman whose name Namir had pledged to forget. He even thought about Roja and Beak and cursed them for traitors under his breath. They were Twilight soldiers, and they should have loathed Echo Base as much as him. But they didn't, because they were also rebel soldiers. And so were Brand and Charmer and Gadrin and Roach. So was the Comtech underneath it all. The freighter captain was right. They deserved better. Namir woke up in a storage unit the next day with a whiskey bottle clutched to his chest, a pounding headache, cheeks numb from cold, and a mouth that tasted like Coyote's biotoxins. When he managed to rouse himself and locate the duty roster, however, he found that his punishment was over, and he'd been reassigned to patrol the perimeter outposts. A day in the cold didn't seem like an improvement, but the other outpost personnel kept their distance, and it gave Namir a chance to think. 2 hours on scanner duty, two staring into the blinding whiteness of the horizon, and two on patrol, then back to the base to thaw. If he'd been able to wear the polarizing goggles on his broken nose, it would have almost been peaceful. Yet even with frost encrusting his eyelashes, he had the opportunity to dwell on thoughts that lingered from the night. They deserved better. In the evening, Roja and Beak found him, told stories about the incompetence of stuck-up base troops, mocked Alliance Special Forces. They didn't explain or justify their change of heart. Together, they reminisced about Twilight's battles on Mygeeto, before Namir's time with the company, and Forsaged, which Namir remembered vividly. Namir wanted to send Roja and Beak away, but he appreciated their intentions, if not their presence. He could smile and enjoy the lies for one night. So the days went, and Namir settled into a routine until the morning when he was summoned to a meeting with Howl and Chalice. He'd seen neither since before the incident in the mess hall, and he immediately knew what the summons meant. The strategy conference was over. They assembled in one of the secondary tactical control rooms off the main command center. Howl and Chalice both looked at once exhausted and energized. Howl greeted Namir warmly, like an old friend reuniting with a lost comrade. Chalice said nothing, smirking from her seat and cupping a steaming metal thermos beneath her chin. "Everything goes planned?" Namir asked as Hal waved him to a seat. "We have a goal and the means to achieve it," Hal said. "Governor Chalice was the star of the show. Her information has proved invaluable." Chalice snorted and gestured dismissively with a thermos. "I sat in back and shot down all Riken's dreams." "But you did it," Hal said lightly, "with such authority." Chalus laughed, but said nothing more. Howell's voice dropped as he turned somber again. "We've been retreating for so long, it's hard to think about striking back. But the Alliance is almost ready. We can win this war." The words made Namir wince. They were far too familiar. Howell kept going. "There's still much to do here, but my part is finished. Better minds than this one," he tapped his left temple, "we'll work out the details. And I need to prepare Twilight. I'd like to depart on the shuttle tomorrow morning. Chalice will remain to advise High Command." "I'll check the ship over this afternoon," Namir said. make sure nothing's frozen up. The thought of leaving Hoth should have elated him. Instead, it curdled in his gut. They deserve better.
There's one other thing, Hal said. Chalice?
Captain Ivan said I can make this a request, but not an order, Chalice said. So it's your call.
Where steam touched her face, her skin gleamed as if she'd been sweating.
If I'm going to be stationed with Alliance High Command, on Hoth or wherever else they end up, I'm going to want my own staff. That includes security. And as we've already established, there aren't many people I trust not to stab me in the back. The job's yours if you want it, Sergeant. You have until tomorrow to decide. Her expression was almost bored. Namir tried to read beneath the affect, see if there was something more to the offer, but he found nothing. Howl had set his face in stone. The idea was tempting in its way. Working with Chalice would be uncomplicated, free of unspoken debts and expectations. He opened his mouth to respond, not sure what he was going to say, when a rebel soldier burst into the room half out of breath. She straightened and saluted as Howl and Chalice turned toward her.
The Empire's found us, she said. We're starting Plan K10. Total evacuation.